Whether you're starting a game or starting your day, you need to pick a starting lineup, and you're going to want the starter from Jack Black. Loaded with the superior skincare the pros love, Kings fans can get the starter for just $10, shipping included. Available exclusively at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB, the starter has four of Jack Black's best-selling skincare and shave products, plus a full-sized intense therapy lip balm, SPF 25. Here's to the winning combination for 2023. The LA Kings and the starter from Jack Black. $10 plus free shipping. Available at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB. While supplies last.
You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Now Nyes attacking, shooting, Portillo, the save on Matthew Nyes.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
Against LaFerriere. LaFerriere shot, score!
Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. The LA Kings acquired the rights to University of Michigan goaltender Eric Portillo from the Buffalo Sabres at the trade deadline. The Swedish-born netminder joined me between wins against Ohio State and Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament last week. Portillo and the University of Michigan will face off against Colgate on March 24th in the first round of the NCAA Men's Hockey Tournament. And we got Chris Peters from Flow Hockey to join us today as well to preview that tournament. Hope you enjoy this look at some Kings collegiate prospects while we all sit around and wait for the next Kings game. Go Kings, go. Joining me now, goaltender for the University of Michigan, Eric Portillo. How are you doing today, Eric?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Now, you and I were just speaking before I hit the record button, and I told you that here in Southern California, if I had seen your last name written, I would have assumed it was pronounced Portillo, but you are from Sweden, so it's Portillo. But then you told me.
Yeah. So my grandfather, he's actually from Spain, and he's Spanish. So, yeah, I guess it's Portillo the correct way. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, we'll call you Eric for now. You were drafted in 2019 by the Buffalo Sabres, but you played in the World Juniors with Tobias Bjornfoot and Samuel Fagamo for Sweden. Have you heard from either of them since your rights were traded to the LA Kings?
Yes. So me and Samuel actually go way back. We played against each other from we were, 6 years old until we were 13 or 14 when we started playing together in Frölunda. So we played at the academy there in Frölunda for 3-4 years. And I consider him one of my best friends. So, I heard from him right away and I talked to him right when it happened. He was super excited and I was super excited to rejoin him.
The Kings, I believe, have 10 Swedes either on the Kings roster or the Ontario Reign roster. Have you spoken? Do you know any of the other ones, Leish Anderson or Andre Lee or any of the rest?
So Kevin Fiala and I actually work out a lot in the summers together. We work with the same coach. So he's been shooting a lot on me the last couple summers. So I know him pretty well.
I saw that you also have skated with Lucas Raymond.
Lucas Raymond is he's in the same training group there, yeah.
And you played with Braden Doyle in Dubuque, correct?
That's right, yeah.
So tons of Kings, Kings links.
Yeah, that's super exciting.
Now, we've discovered from interviewing a lot of goalies over the years that one thing a lot of them have in common is an older brother who played hockey and made them play goaltender. Is that what happened with you and your brother?
Actually, no, he's younger than me.
But oh, he's younger than you. Apologies. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. No, but I think it definitely worked out the same way, kind of. He showed on me and, I think I always enjoyed the position. And it's always fun to stop him. So we actually played together growing up. He played on my team all the way. And then he took this kind of the same path with Frölunda. And now he's trying to get into college. So. He's on the same path.
And how did you make the decision to attend University of Michigan?
I think it started off with just because I was, to be honest, I started looking at Boston schools because that was like, you know, I came from Sweden. I didn't really know a lot about college, and I've heard that Boston schools are very good. So I was over there a couple of times, and then my agent told me to go over there and check Michigan out. And, you know, just the feel from the beginning felt really good. And then, you know, I learned about all the culture and everything, but I think for me personally, from the beginning, it was more about the feeling and, you know, just how the coaches treated me, how all the people and the players who's been here before treated me when I was here. All that played in when I chose Michigan.
Is there anything similar to American college athletic culture in Sweden?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, most guys do high school and then like it's club sports kind of all the way. So there's not really a combination of, you know, university and hockey in the same way you can do here. And I think it's really unfortunate because I think this concept is unbelievable. And, you know, I'm so thankful to get this chance to play here at Michigan. And yeah.
And it sounds like you're enjoying your classes a tremendous amount based on things I've read.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in the Ross Business School. All my freshman year, I worked really hard to transfer into the Ross Business School. And then in there, I have a lot of really good professors and classmates that makes it really fun to go to school, to be honest. And, you know, you learn a lot of very interesting things. And, yeah. I've just overall enjoyed my time there.
When you were playing in Sweden and you were coming up through the Frölunda system, was there any thought in your mind about pursuing something similar to what you're studying at the Ross Business School? Or was that something you discovered once you came over here?
Yeah, I mean, my father always been in business. So I've kind of, you know, you follow your parents and their path and careers. So I think business has always been a path I want to get into, but I also was for a long time considering doing engineering or architecture. I found those paths really interesting as well. But when I came to Michigan and Ross was here, which is such a good school, I was kind of drawn to it. And I think it's one of the best decisions I've made to pick that.
Nicknames in hockey, at least in North America, follow a pretty simple pattern, right? You add, you know, if your name is Kopitar, you're Kopi. If you're Dustin Brown, you're Brownie. Your nickname doesn't really lend itself to that. Are nicknames the same in Sweden as they are here?
Yeah, they're pretty. I think you're on it. I think it's pretty similar. You know, is it one you're thinking of?
Well, I know that you're called the Swedish Bull, at least I read. Yeah. Is that, do people call you that?
Yeah, they actually do. It's kind of funny. It comes from just a pregame ritual when I kind of hyped the guys up and kind of started in back when I played in Dubuque in the USHL. And then when I came here, it kind of followed me. So, yeah.
But they're not calling you that in the locker room. Are you Porty?
Ports, of course, sure.
I forgot about adding the S at the end. You wore number one for Frölunda, I believe. Where does number one come from?
I think I've just always liked number one. Like in Frölunda, it started in Frölunda where like I just got it. And then it kind of stuck with me because I just think it's a really cool number. You know, it's a classic goalie number. And you could tell, it seems like it went out of style a bit. And then, you know, now it's coming back. So I just find it to be a really cool number, classic. That's why I like it.
You're 6'6", or listed at 6'6". Are you still 6'6"?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what kind of game do you play? Who are your goaltending influences?
I think growing up playing in Frölunda and coming from that system, and Henrik Lundqvist was always my goalie inspiration. And now, you know, when I'm a little further along in my career, I'm looking at guys like Vasilevsky, Markstrom, Demko, like the bigger goalies in the NHL that are really successful. So trying to take, you know, pieces out of their games. But I also look at guys like Shesterkin and guys that maybe not has the same, you know, size as me, because usually those guys are very technically proof. So, you know, trying to take stuff from their games as well.
You've played with a bunch of guys at Michigan who have gone on to now play in the NHL or been drafted. I know your immediate focus has to be on Minnesota, but do you stay in touch with those former teammates and talk to them about what life is like in the NHL?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I came in here with one of the, I think, best freshman classes, you know, of all time in college hockey. I mean, we had Owen, Beniers, Brisson, Bordillo, all those guys, Kent Johnson. I mean, and yeah, we have a really close relationship still. You know, we send texts to each other at least once a week, you know, just checking in and staying in touch with all of those guys. So definitely.
You beat Ohio State to reach the Big Ten final, I believe, if I have that correct. You got Minnesota coming up. People will hear this after that game has been played. But college sports has so many sort of, you know, mini tournaments and things, the duel in the D, the face-off on the lake. Then after the Big Ten, you've got, you know, potentially the NCAA, the Frozen Four. Is that almost similar to the cup system in European hockey?
Yeah, I guess in a way. But I think in general, I think Americans are better at, you know, promoting the sport and making it a fan event. And, you know, I think all the things we've been playing in this year has been fantastic. All the events, it's, you know, it's so professional and everything is... it's a lot of fans showing up. It's almost always packed, you know. So yeah, I would say it's similar, but I think Americans are better at selling their events still. It's something that Swedish hockey and European hockey really should look to.
How do the crowds compare? Because everybody here talks about how fantastic, you know, soccer crowds or European hockey crowds are with the singing and the chants and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fan culture is a little different for sure. I think in Europe, all the fans are focused on the pro teams, not so much on the youth like systems, which I think is unfortunate because I think it's a lot of good like hockey in that age groups as well. Yeah, I think in general, like, yeah, European hockey is really good, but it needs to look at the U.S. more for that fan, like, culture. I mean, the Americans are more laid back, I think, in their fan situation, while Europeans, you know, they have more of a... fan clubs. I think college hockey kind of is more similar to Europe than pro sports almost, with their fan clubs and stuff.
If you're going to sit in a crowd and watch a hockey game, where do you like to sit?
I like to sit as close as possible to, you know, to the goalie I want to look at, to be honest. I like watching the goalies. Yeah, as close as possible, I think.
Would you like to sit like right behind him, study the shots coming in, or maybe off to the side?
I think off to the side is better. You know, you can see a little more, from the front, and you can see the shooters, the players coming in, and things going on. So, yeah, I like that.
Excellent. Well, Eric, we appreciate you giving us your time today, and good luck against Minnesota.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Joining us now for a preview of the NCAA hockey tournament. Is that what we call it, Chris, the tournament?
Yeah. Sure. The NCAA men's hockey tournament.
Perfect. Chris Peters, how are you doing today, Chris?
I'm great. It's good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
And of course, featuring Zach Dooley. How are you doing today, Zach?
Jesse, I am doing well.
So there's three teams we want to focus on, Chris, because there's three teams featuring Kings prospects. We're going to start with the University of Denver, which I believe is the four seed, if I have that correct, in their region or bracket. Or oh, it's three? Did I write that down wrong?
Wait, no, you're right. Sorry. All right. That's me. My bad.
I was going to say, I just wrote them down. But the reason we're starting with them is because Jared Wright, a forward selected by the LA Kings, oh, I didn't write this one down. I'm trying to pull this one off the top of my head. I want to say in the sixth round. He is dealing with an injury, so we're not entirely sure how much he might play. But, Chris, what do we know about the University of Denver, Jared Wright's role in their lineup, and the likelihood of seeing him if they go deep in the tournament?
Yeah, you know, I think Denver as a whole, you know, part of the strength of their team is the mobility of their defense and the guys that play. And they've got veteran guys, and with Jared being a first year player and you know, a guy that came out of the USHL last year, he's not going to play as much as some of those more established guys. You have to remember that all of those guys were part of this team last year and they won the national championship. So the fact that he's playing down the lineup isn't necessarily a concern. The other thing that's really good about Jared Wright this year is that he's been a contributor in that limited role. He's got 8 goals already. He's not contributing at that super high level, but as a freshman playing on a team that has national title aspirations, I think he's handled himself pretty well. So that's a good thing. And, you know, to be a guy that's a first year player to contribute in the way that he has, is a good step for him. This is a guy that's still very early in his collegiate career. So that's going to, you know, he's only going to grow. And this is a team that's going to lose a lot from this roster next season. So, you know, I think it's going to be more about him. But Denver absolutely has an opportunity, as they do every single year, it seems, to compete for a national title. And you know, any experience that you get is good. He did play in the semifinal in the NCHC. Denver did lose that game to local rival Colorado College. However, you know, you look at the vast body of work of their season, and there's a lot to look forward to heading into the tournament. They've got a decent enough draw. You know, it's there's never an easy game at this stage of the season. But, you know, this is a team that certainly has aspirations of going to the Frozen Four.
Chris, you touched on it a little bit there in that answer, but what does it say about a player like Jared Wright, who has come into such a strong program as a freshman and stepped right into the lineup? Because I imagine you don't see that with everyone coming in because of the depth that they have.
Yeah, you know, I think in this case, Denver had a kind of an interesting setup. They brought in some transfers, Casey Dornbach, Tristan Bros, that played pretty significant roles in their lineup. So that also pushes guys like Wright down in the depth chart, you know. And so you have to find a way to carve out a role, and I think that's what he's done. You know, he's not lighting it up this season, but he's got, you know, 8 goals as a freshman is a pretty solid number, especially in a lower lineup situation as he's been in this year. But, you know, basically pretty much been like a third line guy. So he's giving you that secondary scoring. And anytime you have a player that, you know, especially a guy that you've picked in the sixth round, a guy that's coming straight out of junior, that's playing in a very established program, it does say a lot about his ability to come in and be ready. You know, the jump from junior to college is probably a bit bigger than people realize. The game moves faster. The players are older and stronger. You know, Casey Dornbach, who I mentioned, is 25 years old on your own roster. So, you know, there are guys there's different varying levels of maturity. So if you're able to come in and be a contributor in year one, that is a very good, very good indication of where you're going as a player. So I think that he's certainly positioned himself well. He's got the size. He's, you know, now next year, he's probably going to be in a much more elevated role for this team.
Chris, I want to spend just a second sort of setting the stage for talking about college hockey, because I frequently forget that when we're talking about Canadian major juniors, we're talking about an age range from 16 to maybe 21. Looking at these rosters, you know, you talk about Jared Wright as a freshman, he's 20. There are kids on these teams that are 18 and 19, but there are kids that are 21, 22, 23, 24, and as you just said, 25. There's 16 teams in this tournament, not 64 or 68, whatever it is in the basketball tournament. So there's 16, 4 regions, 4 teams per region. And like we said, guys 18 to 25, what is the what's a good way of thinking of this in a comparison to other sports?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly unique. You know, I think you look, especially in college sports, and I think it's, you know, often administrators don't quite know what to make of it with the number of players that are older, and the guys that are, you know, there's a real dearth of true freshmen every single year. You know, it's only the really best players that are available at 18 are going to be able to make that jump right away. You know, in terms from a development standpoint, though, you know, they're going to play a shorter schedule with the 40, you know, pretty much a maximum of about 42 games. And most teams will play, you know, closer to 38 or so in a given season. And, but that still every single game is a battle, especially if you're a younger player. It's like making the jump from, you know, college to the pros in when you're going from junior or high school to college hockey. So that's kind of, it allows those players to manage that. And then also, you know, the thing that I've always said about college hockey in terms of what it does for a player's development is that, you know, you might not be playing against the best of the best when it comes to, you know, these guys that are 24 and 25 years old in terms of talent, but you're playing with guys that have been playing hockey for, you know, 20 plus years. And so you're, you know, they have experience. They know things that you don't, they know the tricks of the trade. And they can outsmart you or outwork you or outstrength you, you know, all those different things. So to be successful at the collegiate level at a young age or even at 20 years old, first year out of junior, is a significant accomplishment for any player because it is a very it's a quality level of hockey. It's well coached. It's difficult to cut through offensively sometimes. And so that, you know, it creates that challenge, and it's why it's become such a significant stepping stone. And each year it seems like a more significant stepping stone for players coming into the NHL. And a lot of guys are spending 2 to 3 years in college before making the jump because the development is allowing them to kind of skip that AHL step in a lot of cases for the really high end guys. You know, that we're seeing guys like Cale Makar who spent 2 years there. Adam Fox spent 3 years, Quinn Hughes, 2 years, you know, those, that seems to be the magic number for a lot of these guys. Mikey Anderson had a great NCAA career and arrived to the NHL largely ready. You know, he needed a little extra time, but he was largely ready to be a professional by that point. So it's really interesting to see kind of that development track and how it's worked for so many players.
Denver takes on Cornell Thursday at 5:30. That's Eastern time. The next school we want to focus on is Harvard. Alex LaFerriere plays a slightly larger role for Harvard than Jared Wright does for Denver. He's the third round pick of the LA Kings. They play Ohio State Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. What do we know about Alex LaFerriere specifically? It looks like Harvard's a younger team than Denver to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's a guy that had to wait an extra year to get into Harvard because of the COVID situation. They didn't play hockey in 2020-21. So he goes back to the USHL, has a 50-point season, comes into college overripe, and has 31 points as a freshman. Now this year he's had 42 points. And 40 points, if you have 40 points in college hockey, doesn't sound like a lot. In college hockey, it's a lot. It is, you know, you're at that point, you're over a point per game player. He's played in 33 games this year. He's got 21 goals. You know, and this is a guy that has continually elevated his game. Every single timeout, you know, I think we're seeing a player that has that good mix of strength and skill. He's used his experience well, and he's become a significant piece for this team. And this is one of the better offensive teams in the country. He's second on the team in scoring. He's actually ahead of Matt Coronato, who was a first-round draft pick of Calgary. And so he's ahead of him in team scoring this year. He's behind Sean Farrell, who leads the team with 52 points and is a legitimate Hobey Baker candidate. So, you know, I think that what we've seen from him is continued progression, continued pushing forward, continued strength. And that has all contributed to him looking more and more like a really strong NHL prospect, a guy that's going to contribute to your roster. He'll probably play down the lineup. He's not necessarily going to be like a top six guy, but you know, I think that he has proven with his time at Harvard and his continued growth, this is a player that has really put himself in a really solid position to be an NHL contributor in the very near future.
You talk about those other two big guys, Coronado and Farrell. How does the Ferrier kind of differentiate from those guys? And you know, I've watched Harvard play a few times. Sometimes it looks like they play together. Sometimes they kind of spread them out. How does he kind of find his own niche on that team?
You know, I think he's, you know, part of it is there's a drive to him. He's got a motor to him. Like, you know, all three of those guys have really good motors, good work ethic. They're good off the puck as well. You know, Sean Farrell's not a big guy, so he has to rely more on speed. Coronado is a big shooter. You know, he's a guy that likes to get himself open. And I think Laferriere is the kind of guy that will drive play, that will go after pucks, that will dig things out, that will that extra kind of grit factor that he has allowed him to be a bigger contributor to that roster. And so in playing the style that he has the puck a lot. He is often going to get the puck when he doesn't have it. So I think that that's part of what has really allowed him to create this niche that makes him a significant piece of one of the best forward groups, you know, in the country. And, you know, he's in the last game, you know, he's kind of the fact that he's often played away from those two players, the fact that he's not playing with, you know, like in the semifinal against Colgate, he was not playing with that trio. That allows him to really define his own role on, you know, whatever line he ends up being on. It's typically been with John Farinacci. And that's a line that's all about work ethic on top of the skill. So I think that he's going to be, he's the kind of player that you win with, right? You know, those are the guys that you win with because they are going to do that extra thing that gets you a little bit more offense. And so he does a good job of getting himself open. He's a good shooter himself. You know, I think he's just become an excellent college hockey player. I mean, a legitimate college hockey star player. And that usually translates very well to NHL.
Last Friday, he scored the game winner against Cornell in the ECAC hockey semifinals. It was a 0-0 game in overtime. He scores to make it 1-0. How much stock do you put personally in that kind of theatrics is not the right word I want to use, but in that kind of, like, you know, overtime heroics?
I would say that it every time you've done something before, you've proven that you can do it, you know, like where it's like if you're in that situation, first of all, being in that situation is important. You want guys that are familiar with late game situations, guys that are familiar with those high leverage moments in games. When they have success in those moments, it just builds confidence for them in those kinds of situations. It also shows the level of trust the coaching staff had in him to, you know, continually throw him over the boards. When you shorten the bench, he's not a guy that you're leaving out of the mix. And you know, I think the way that he's played, he's scored a lot of big goals this year. You know, he scored a lot of meaningful goals, and he's had games where he's taken games over. He's had some four-point games over the course of the season, and he's had, you know, those different things. But, yeah, to show that you can do it in those moments means a lot. And I think there have been a lot of guys over the years in college hockey or in world junior situations or wherever they might be, junior hockey as well. You know, you look at Jordan Eberle, he's still, you know, renowned for his whatever clutch gene that he has. And that, you know, that can materialize in any certain kind of way. So I think it only helps, and it's more for confidence and experience than it is for actually saying, oh, this is the guy, you know, he's going to score a Stanley Cup winning goal, or he's going to score a lot of overtime goals for us. No, it's more just when he's been in those situations before, you know that he can do it.
The final team we want to look at is the University of Michigan and the goaltender, Eric Portillo. Now, I have heard so many conflicting reports about Eric Portillo. I've heard he's absolutely fantastic. I've heard that, you know, he's not as good as Devon Levi. I've heard that the reason he's not as good as Devon Levi is that they lost all these players to the NHL. I had a chance to speak to him. He seems like a delightful guy. How good is University of Michigan, and how important is Eric Portillo to their success?
Well, he's a very interesting prospect. For the first part, the University of Michigan is an outstanding team led by a dominant offense that includes Adam Fantilli, You know, Mackie Samuskevich, Gavin Brindley, Rutger McGroarty. I mean, a lot of these guys that I'm mentioning right now are or will be first round picks. Then on the back end, you've got Luke Hughes, who is, you know, one of the best collegiate defensemen of the last decade. You know, he has been a productive player. His second half has been exceptional. Michigan just went into Minnesota and won the Big Ten championship against a team that I think is the best team on paper in this country. And they won. And you don't do that without your goaltender. And so the thing about Eric, he is the one thing that I would say to Kings fans is I think he's the kind of prospect that requires a lot of patience, because at this point, he hasn't reached the level of consistency year over year, game to game, week to week that you need to have to be a top end NHL goalie. But I think he can get there. The things that you need to know about him is he's massive. He is a huge human being at 6'6", and he can make plays. He is incredibly quick. He has been, you know, he's a college junior right now. He came into North America, spent an extra year, played in Dubuque, and played very well for them, you know, over that first season. And in the time, his freshman year, he was behind Straussman, and so he was backing him up. The last 2 years, he's been the starter. His numbers this year were not as good. And I think that he actually at times struggled this year and at times was, you know, it because of the style that he plays, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to predictability and consistency, which are two things that you want from a goaltender. And again, I'm not saying he can't get there because I think he has tremendous upside. There's a reason that the Kings went out and got him. I know that that is a player that they've been interested in for a long time. And that they did the necessary work on him. And I am pretty confident he's going to sign when the season is over. And then you get to sink your hooks into him and work on that development and continue to get him more pro reps. He has the potential to steal games. We've seen him do it before. We have seen him play exceptional hockey. He's now going into his second Frozen Four. I think the experience, the fact that they just won the Big Ten championship in a very hostile environment in Minnesota is going to be great for him. And I think he's going to be ready to start his pro career. Not being as good as Devon Levi is not a knock. Devon Levi is the best collegiate goalie that I've seen in, I don't know how long. Well, since Connor Hellebuck. So, you know, so that's what we're talking about. That's a level that only a select few goalies can get to. And so whether or not he's better than, you know, as good as Devon Levi is kind of irrelevant to me. What matters is that this is a player with an incredibly high ceiling, a ton of potential that has gotten good goalie instruction, but needs more of it and needs to refine his game and continue to refine his game. And the reason that he didn't want to sign with Buffalo wasn't because he was scared of competing with Devon Levi. They just had so many goalies. You don't know how many reps they're going to get. Now he goes into an organization that's kind of in limbo, right? You know, like there's a lot to be figured out. You know, what is Cal Peterson's long term? Is he going to get his game back? What are the other prospects in the system already? You know, are they at this caliber? I think as he enters the organization, Eric Portillo is going to come in as the number one goalie prospect in the organization. And so now you are a better organization for having that player. It's just, you know, you have to manage expectations and you have to be patient, because I still think that Portillo needs a couple of years before he's ready to be an NHL goalie. And there's nothing wrong with that, because goalies take longer and bigger goalies can take longer as well. And as long as you're committed to the development, then you're fine. I think you're happy with that addition to your organization.
It's very rare, right, that you see a goalie just step out of either junior or college and step into the NHL, no problem. As you talk about Portillo, kind of sounds to me like he has a lot of the tools that you can't teach. Like he has the 6'6 frame, the athleticism, the ability to steal the game, but maybe is lacking some of the things that can come when you put him into an NHL organization, when you give him like goaltending specific coaching every single day, you put him on a pro schedule, you let him kind of work through some of those things. Is that fair to say that he does have those tools and maybe just needs maybe the refinement and the consistency and the experience side of it?
Yeah, I think refinement is probably the best term for him. Is the kit is there. It's there needs to be some more molding. You know, there's basically just at this point, and it's how to be a pro. It's how to prepare every day. It's how to, you know, to bring the kind of same energy to harness those athletic tools that he has and make them a little bit more, you know, you don't want to over rely on those. You want to have some technique. I think that when I watch him play, you know, I think that the rebound control and just, you know, using his frame to his advantage even more than he does. Those are the types of things that you can only get to with reps. And as you play against better and better competition, what you find pretty quickly is that they're going to be able to pick you apart way better than anybody else has before. So you have to make that adjustment. And the only way to do that is by playing games, playing in practice, getting that continual instruction. And I think that that's going to really benefit him. Being, you know, especially, I think the other thing that makes the Kings a particularly good fit organization for him is that AHL-NHL relationship where the facilities are shared, where you're seeing these players and you're close to the NHL organization. They have a great feel for what you are and where you're at and where you need to get to. And that setup is very development forward. And that's why we've seen so many guys start coming through Ontario and rising into the organization. That's what you would expect to be able to happen with Eric Portillo as well. So I think that that's like Zach, you're exactly right. He's got the tools. It's just a matter of bringing everything that's possibly that you can out of him. Because I think as we saw this year, there's still work that needs to be done. But again, you know, the things that he can't teach, you know, that gives you a lot of leeway. And not every doesn't, you know, certainly doesn't guarantee that a player is going to get there. But you'd rather have a guy like that in your system than not when you have, you know, the development track record that the Kings have clearly had in the last several years.
One final question, Chris, before we let you go for the day. When the World Juniors happens every year, I sort of politely roll my eyes and think to myself, this tournament is for entertainment purposes. If you enjoy watching the games, by all means, enjoy watching them. But I don't want to hear any pearl clutching about bad performances or hear any trumpet, you know, blaring over really good performances. NCAA tournament's a little different. These are teams that have been together, have played together, you know, have built consistency, chemistry, etc. So if I'm a Kings fan watching this tournament or watching some of the games in this tournament, what am I looking for when I'm watching Harvard, Michigan, Denver? If there's a Kings prospect, how am I evaluating their performance in this tournament?
Well, I think you look at the certain things. Context is everything when we're evaluating players. Like when we're talking about Jared Wright, understanding that he's a third line player on a team that's very deep is really important to understanding and evaluating how he played. You want to evaluate these players relative to their role in the team. Eric Portillo has one job. His job is to stop the puck and is to give Michigan the best possible chance to win. If he doesn't do that, well, then he didn't do that in that particular game. We've got a lot of body of work to say, well, he can do that, but unfortunately, if it doesn't happen for him, it's not the end of the world. You know, I think in a situation, Alex LaFerriere, this is a guy you would say, okay, this is the most important time of the season. You're a sophomore by experience, but, you know, technically a junior by age. And, you know, we want you, you should do what you've done all season, which is to dictate the pace of play to be a guy that gets the pucks. So those are the things you want to see. You want to see guys play within whatever, you know, if you didn't know them before, hopefully this gives you a little bit of context about what they do and what they are for their teams. And so, you know, that's one thing. But I think the biggest thing that everyone should also know about the NCAA tournament is, similar to the World Juniors, and especially at this time of year, single game elimination, anything can happen, one shot game. We've seen 16s beat ones more, you know, we've seen, one of the best Minnesota teams of all time lose to Holy Cross in the first game of the tournament. You know, that's happened. Minnesota's playing Canisius this year. Don't think it's going to happen, but again, it could. You know, so it is, you know, you look at the body of work of the season, and certainly this time of year, you want to see those players show up. You want to see them play a role. You know, if it's Jared Wright playing a third line role, can he exceed the expectations that you have of a player in that role? If he does, amazing. If he doesn't, he's coming back next year. So, you know, like there's nothing that says that these guys have to perform exceptionally well, but, you know, certainly you want to see those players. And I, you know, both Michigan and Denver, and even Harvard too. Harvard has a real great chance to get out of their region. You know, they've got an opportunity there in front of them with a really solid team. You know, if you get these guys into the Frozen Four, it's all gravy at that point. It's a great experience for them. It's a big stage for them to play on. It's national TV, so you get a chance to see them as well. Everything about it is great. So this is one of my favorite events of the year. Like the World Juniors is right up there. And but I think that this weekend in particular, the weekend that we're talking, you know, before we're talking with the regionals, is by far one of the best weekends of my entire year, because it's nonstop hockey. And it's also incredible games. I have never been bored watching the NCAA tournament. And I can't wait for this one. We have a great field of teams, tons of NHL prospects. And whether you're rooting for Kings prospects or not, there's so many star players that you're going to know that are going to be part of the NHL real soon, playing in this tournament.
Well, the way the brackets are lined up, we won't see any Kings players playing against one another until April 6th at the earliest. That would be the Frozen Four. And if Michigan and Harvard were to both advance to that point, we would see it. Zach, anything to ask before we wrap this up?
No, my hometown Rensselaer Engineers did not qualify this year. Otherwise, I might throw a question in about them. But otherwise, good to learn a little bit more about our guys in the NCAA ranks.
Yeah, Chris, yeah, where are the Marist Red Foxes ranked in the national?
Like 191st, I think.
I'm gonna double check that.
62 out of 62 Division One other NCAA hockey teams.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. Chris Peters, where can people find your work before we actually let you go?
Yeah, so everything that I'm, especially this tournament coverage, will be at flowhockey.tv. You can also catch my podcast, Talking Hockey Sense, where we'll have a full NCAA preview, and on Twitter at Chris M. Peters, is I'll be sharing thoughts throughout the tournament and probably ramblings and a lot of stupid stuff too.
Well, Chris, thank you as always. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.